Hello, it is Tuesday, July 7th. Welcome to Korea 24. I'm your host, Andrew Jung. Samsung Electronics once again projected record-breaking earnings for the second quarter with an estimated operating profit of nearly 90 trillion won, or more than 58 billion U.S. dollars, driven by the continued surge in semiconductor sales surpassing the likes of NVIDIA. More on that in today's news briefing. During our in-depth news analysis segment, we'll be talking about the weak Korean won and if the recently launched 24-hour market for the currency will help strengthen it. Plus, on Hallyu Highlights, we talk again about ATEEZ and an indie group that's been making international headlines. Korea 24 starts now. Samsung Electronics has released its second quarter operating profit estimate, and its streak of quarterly records continues with a figure of nearly 90 trillion won, or more than 58 billion U.S. dollars. Strong demand for semiconductors and the global AI boom appear to have fueled a stellar performance by the tech giant. For more on the earnings guidance and other major headlines of the day, we have in the studio with us Deputy Editor-in-Chief of KBS World's English News Service, Kim In-kyung. Hello, In-kyung.
Hello, Andrew.
Samsung Electronics has shattered records yet again, surpassing NVIDIA and Apple's peak quarterly operating profit. Walk us through the numbers, please.
Sure. Samsung's estimated operating profit for the second quarter is 89.4 trillion won, or around 58.4 billion U.S. dollars. That's a 19-fold increase from the same period last year. It's also more than double its operating profit for all of last year and also exceeds the combined total profits for all of 2023, 2024, and 2025. Excluding provisions for employee bonuses, Samsung's second quarter operating profit is estimated to have topped 106 trillion won. Sales surged almost 130% year-on-year to a record 171 trillion won.
That's obviously very impressive growth. Now, Samsung hasn't given us the official breakdown by department yet, but everyone is pointing, of course, to AI as the main engine here. What's driving this frantic demand? And if the news is this good, why did Samsung's stock drop today?
Well, it all boils down to the global infrastructure rush for artificial intelligence. Tech companies worldwide are buying up high-performance memory chips as fast as Samsung can make them. So its device solutions unit, which handles semiconductors, is carrying the entire company on its back right now. Analysts estimate that in the second quarter, DRAM and NAND prices surged by over 50% quarter-on-quarter. Over the same period, the total market size expanded by more than 60%, reaching 350 trillion won. But there are forecasts that memory price growth could slow down in the third quarter. This comes as higher semiconductor prices are expected to push up prices of tech products, which could lead to a drop in demand. To your second point, Samsung beat market expectations, but its shares closed down almost 7% as investors took the announcement as an exhaustion of positive momentum. Samsung is scheduled to release its final earnings report with details on the performance of each business division at the end of this month.
The KOSPI plummeted almost 5% as investors sold off Samsung Electronics and South Korea's other semiconductor giant SK Hynix. In-kyung, can you explain?
Well, Samsung and Hynix shares fell more than 10% at one point on profit-taking and rebalancing by foreign investors. SK Hynix eventually closed down 6%. An analyst said the official market consensus for Samsung's operating profit was 85 trillion won, but actual expectations among traders were likely higher in the 90 trillion won range. Because of this, the dominant short-term perspective was to treat the results as a sell-on event.
Meanwhile, moving on to other headlines, the 2026 NATO summit kicked off in Ankara, Turkey, on Tuesday for a two-day run. President Lee Jae-myung is also attending at the invitation of NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte. What can we expect from the summit?
Defense spending is expected to be a key focus of the summit amid the Russia-Ukraine war and the Middle East conflict, as well as the U.S. pressing allies to boost their military budgets. South Korea's presidential office said it is arranging bilateral talks during the summit between Lee and leaders of countries interested in defense industry cooperation. Later Tuesday, Lee is scheduled to participate in an Indo-Pacific Forum discussion with the leaders from Japan, Australia, and New Zealand, as well as the NATO chief. He'll also give a keynote speech during a session of the NATO Summit Defense Industry Forum. Starting Thursday, he is set to make a state visit to Mongolia.
And while we're on the subject of defense, Hanwha Ocean has lost its bid to supply Canada with modern diesel submarines after German shipbuilder ThyssenKrupp Marine Systems was announced as the preferred choice. Ingyeong, what can you tell us?
Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney announced the preferred bid at a naval base in Halifax, Nova Scotia on Monday before departing for the NATO summit. He said it was a difficult, close decision as both sides met the capabilities of the Royal Canadian Navy and put forward strong proposals. Carney said that should negotiations with TKMS for a final deal falls through, Canada retains the right to designate Hanwha as the preferred supplier to enter negotiations. The Canadian patrol submarine project is worth an estimated 60 trillion won, or around $39 billion. It involves replacing Canada's aging fleet of Victoria-class submarines with up to 12 modern diesel submarines, as well as 30 years of maintenance, repair, and operations work.
In other headlines, revisions to the Act on Promotion of Information and Communications Network Utilization and Information Protection, which aims to root out disinformation online, took effect Tuesday. The so-called, quote, fake news law requires operators of online platforms with at least a million daily users to devise procedures and policies on the reporting and handling of false information. Ingyeong, can you tell us more?
The revised legislation holds major online platforms responsible for the harm they cause by intentionally circulating content that's been proven false. Now, those platforms can be ordered to pay punitive damages of up to five times the losses they cause others. This is in addition to fines of up to ₩1 billion, or around $650,000. Platforms subject to the revised communications network law include Naver, YouTube, Instagram, X, Facebook, and any others with at least a million daily users. Personal social media posts or private conversations, such as those on KakaoTalk, are not subject to the tightened regulations.
The law has sparked fierce debates between the ruling and opposition parties over freedom of speech. What are the parties saying?
The Conservative main opposition People Power Party says the law violates the right to freedom of speech. It plans to file a constitutional complaint and pursue the removal of what it calls toxic clauses in the law, arguing that the state shouldn't be determining what is true or false. The ruling Democratic Party has countered that the amendments only serve to prevent the spread of disinformation and hold bad actors accountable. It says the main opposition is misrepresenting the law by making it out to be a tool of government censorship. Meanwhile, the Journalists Association of Korea has issued a statement warning that while the law contains language excluding reporting the public interest, a recurring cycle of disputes and expensive lawsuits would inevitably have a chilling effect on the media.
In weather news, heavy showers are expected on Wednesday, and some areas could get up to 200 millimeters of precipitation by Thursday, or even more. Give us the details, please.
Rainfall of around 100 millimeters was recorded in parts of the Chungcheong region and in North Gyeongsang province on Tuesday, prompting the issuance of heavy rain advisories in areas such as Yeongdong and Gimcheon. Although the rain clouds have since moved east, wet conditions will return early Wednesday morning. The weather forecast shows most regions will experience showers, especially northern Gyeonggi province and inland areas of northern Gangwon province, which could see downpours of around 30 millimeters per hour. But there will be a slight break before the rain intensifies again in the evening. The Korea Meteorological Administration says downpours will continue into Thursday, with more than 200 millimeters of rain a possibility for part of North Jeolla province and South Chungcheong province. Other areas in the central region, including Seoul, are expected to get anywhere from 50 millimeters to more than 150, while the southern part of the country could get up to 120 millimeters.
And that's it for today's news briefing. Thank you, Ingyeong.
Thank you, Andrew.
South Korea on Monday extended foreign exchange trading hours for the Korean won to improve foreign investors' access to the country's financial market and to broaden currency convertibility. As of yesterday morning, the $1 exchange market operates 24 hours a day on all weekdays, including South Korean public holidays. The move to 24-hour trading has raised expectations that it could stabilize the depreciation of the Korean won. According to the Bank of Korea, the average exchange rate stood at around 1,485 won per dollar during the first half of the year. That marked the second highest first half average on record, behind the record set in the first half of 1998 during the Asian financial crisis. Since late May, the Korean won has been trading over the psychologically important level of 1,501 against the U.S. dollar. To discuss these issues, we are joined on the line by economics professor Yang Jun-suk from the Catholic University of Korea. Hello, Professor Yang.
Hello.
Let's first talk about the South Korean won and its continued weakness. Just a year ago, the Korean won was trading in the 1,301 range against the U.S. dollar, but the local currency is showing no signs of strengthening against the greenback. Again, since late May, the Korean won has been trading over the important level of 1,501 against the U.S. dollar. Why has the local currency been so weak against the dollar?
Okay, well, it has both long-term structural factors and short-term factors. So let's look at it. The biggest long-term structural factor is that Korean foreign exchange market is small compared to the Korea's economy. Korea is now something like sixth largest stock market, sixth largest exporter, but the foreign exchange market is about 14th largest. So because the foreign exchange market is small, a relatively small capital flow can have a lot of effect on the exchange rate. So that's the first problem. And then this is a somewhat minor contribution, but still, the interest rates are currently higher in the U.S. The policy interest rates are currently higher in the U.S. than Korea, so that gives an incentive to invest abroad. Mm-hmm. And then going into some of the temporary factors, traditionally, two factors have really affected the day-to-day change in foreign exchange rates for Korea. The first is exporting firms earning dollars and then selling those dollars in the local foreign exchange market. But currently, well, the biggest dollar earners are semiconductor firms, but they're not selling their dollars in the Korean foreign exchange market. They're keeping the dollars for their own use. And that's partially because they want to reserve some dollars in case U.S. President Trump asks them to invest further in the United States. Also, the current weak Korean won means that if they change the dollars into won and they need those dollars later, they might have to pay more expensively to change those dollars into won and then change it back into dollars again. So they're not exchanging it in the market, they're just keeping it. So that's restricting the supply of dollars in the Korean foreign exchange market. But foreign investors who had invested in Korean stocks for the last year to 2 years, they're selling stocks right now. During the first half of the year, they sold about 148 trillion won's worth of Korean stocks. So that is really the most direct force weakening the Korean won. Mm. In addition, we have individual Korean investors who are investing in the United States for the last 2 years or so. And Korean government tried to induce these foreign investors to come back to Korea, but surprisingly little came back. And then during the month of March to April and perhaps up to early May, we had shock from the Iran war, concerns about higher oil prices, causing low growth in Korea, as well as maybe reduction in trade surplus. That did not turn out to be what actually happened, but still, concerns about that had raised the won exchange rate. And the continuing weakness of the won has created a sort of an expectation. People are thinking that 1,500 won per dollar or above is the new normal. Mm-hmm. So once you have that psychological expectation, it really becomes harder to drive the yuan below 1500 unless there's a big shock, and we haven't had such big shocks yet.
You mentioned that the market for the Korean won was small compared to the size of the South Korean economy. And I guess perhaps to address that factor, South Korea on Monday launched round-the-clock foreign exchange trading. The $1 market will operate 24 hours a day on weekdays, including on holidays. Trading will pause on weekends and New Year's Day. Until last week, transactions were possible from 9 a.m. every weekday until 2 a.m. the next day. Finance Minister Koo Yoon-chul said the opening of the round-the-clock system will also serve as a starting point for the Korean won's global leap, as domestic and foreign investors, as well as trading companies, can trade foreign currencies unhindered by the time of the day. Professor Young, could you give us the details about the government's thinking behind this new system and what your take is on this 24-hour system?
Well, as you mentioned, this is part of the initiative to make Korean exchange, foreign exchange market larger. But this is a necessary stop on the way to a larger foreign exchange market. But by itself, I don't think will change anything very much. Now, if you look back about 3 years ago, Korea's foreign exchange market operating hours were about 9 to 3:30 p.m. But that was extended to 2 a.m. That didn't really affect anything very much. So extending it to 24 hours, again, I don't think it will have anything too substantive. It probably will reduce small volatility somewhat. But if you think about how the foreign exchange market can work, if you have a very rapid change the day before, then if you have closing hours, then that acted like sort of a sidecar in the stock market. It gave it stopped transactions and gave people time to think. But now we will no longer have that closed market period unless you go into weekends. So these type of trends, if it starts, you may not be able to stop it as easily. So that does require a more careful monitoring by the foreign exchange authorities and perhaps even intervention if needed. But because we have 24-hour transactions, previously when the market closed, people waited until the morning to make their transactions. So we had some volatility in the morning. That's probably going to be reduced because they can make transactions anytime now and they don't have to wait until the morning. Mm-hmm. So what we'll probably see is reduction in small volatility. We will probably won't see anything change very much fundamentally, but there is a very slight increase in the possibility that we will have large volatility. So as I said, the foreign exchange authorities should watch out for that. But I don't expect any large changes from extending the hours. If Korea wants to really make the foreign exchange market larger for Korean won, then we will probably have to engage in further reforms, and we will probably have to allow some risky foreign exchange financial products that can act as a hedge or money-making opportunities. Because if you look at the foreign exchange markets in the advanced countries, the actual foreign exchange transactions dealing with real transactions like exports and imports or buying stocks or selling stocks, they're actually a very small part of the foreign exchange rate market. Mm-hmm. The large component comes from people buying and selling foreign currency to make a profit. And this can be risky products. So if Korea wants to make the market bigger, then the first step that they had to take was to extend the hours of the foreign exchange rate market. But they will also need to introduce more risky financial products and reduce regulations. So there will be more monetary profit transactions taking place. So this is a necessary step in going to larger foreign exchange market, but it won't do anything really consequential by itself.
What impact do you think this change will have on the local currency in the short and long term? And do you think this new system will help the local currency gain a little bit against the dollar?
Okay, so as I said, I don't expect this to change anything really fundamentally. Currently, if you look at the weakening of the yuan, that's not because of anything in the foreign exchange market. It's because foreign investors are selling stocks in the stock market and taking that profit out of the country, so they need to change it to U.S. dollars. So if you want to deal with weaker yuan, then at least currently you would have to deal with it at the stock market, not at the foreign exchange market.
South Korea's exports, this is something that Professor Yang mentioned earlier a few minutes ago, in June soared past the 100 billion U.S. dollars mark for the first time, propelled, of course, by a surge in semiconductor shipments amid the ongoing artificial intelligence boom. The country's exports surged 70.9% year on year to an all-time high of $102.25 billion in June. Professor Yang, what's your take on this achievement and how significant is this?
Well, you can argue that we made history. This is the highest June monthly exports ever. And it's mostly due to semiconductors. Compared to June last year, semiconductor exports rose by 199.5% to $44.8 billion. So about 44% of Korea's exports in June were semiconductors.
Mm-hmm.
But the good news is that the increase in exports were not just limited to semiconductors. Out of the 20 major categories that the customs report every month, there were very large increases. That is over 50% increases in wireless communications equipment, computers, which actually rose 309%, and just falling slightly before below 50% is petroleum products and cosmetics. In overall, of the 20 categories, 18 categories rose, and 9 categories had the highest June monthly exports ever. So the increase in exports are spreading. If the semiconductors were excluded from the total exports, comparing the semiconductor excluded exports last year and this year, June, exports still rose by 19%.
Mm-hmm.
And of the 9 major regions that customs report, 7 regions are up. The U.S., China, India, ASEAN, and EU, we had the highest monthly exports for June in history. Now, is it because the Korean won is cheap? I don't think so. And that's because it's an imperfect measure, but the monthly trade report also reports volume of exports, and volume of exports actually fell in June by 3.3%. Now, if the exports increased because of the cheap yuan, then volume should have risen, but instead it fell. So it has to do more with increase in prices rather than increase in volume or cheap foreign exchange rate. And this is mirrored in the prices of semiconductors. The prices of semiconductors rose tremendously during the first half of this year.
We're going to refocus on this, I guess, good news, as you described. The sharp rise in exports has made South Korea the fourth country in the world after Germany, China, and the U.S. to surpass this $100 billion threshold in monthly exports. This strong momentum has raised hopes that South Korea's annual exports could reach $1 trillion this year. Professor Young, do you expect to see strong semiconductor exports in the second half of this year as well? And are you optimistic that the country could reach another milestone by achieving the $1 trillion mark in annual exports?
Okay, well, let's start with the last question first. I think as long as the semiconductor demand remains strong, it is possible to reach $1 trillion this year. Problem is, will the semiconductor demand last? And that is actually a very good question because no one really knows. Now, most analysts do expect the strong semiconductor demand to last until at least next year. But a sizable minority is questioning that conclusion. They point out the fact that the AI boom that they're having in the United States, not only stock prices, but data center building, it could be a bubble because right now the AI companies are not very profitable. So all the construction, all the rise in stocks, they're based more on hope than actual performance. Now, if that hope comes true, then everything's fine. But if that hope is overblown, then we might have a bubble on our hands, which may explode and reduce semiconductor demand very quickly. And then there's more firms are borrowing to make the data center investment. Mm-hmm. And the possibility of Fed raising the interest rates later this year may affect that investment and semiconductor demand. And there's more and more resistance in the U.S. for building data centers and AI. And that's partially because AI prices, service prices, have risen in the last year, and a lot of companies find it unaffordable. And also there's more public fear that AI may take away jobs. And concerning data center construction, there's more concern about environmental impact, rise in electricity prices, as well as the usual NIMBY, not in my backyard syndrome. So the majority opinion is that semiconductor demand will remain strong until the next year. But there is a gloomy possibility that the demand may pop earlier than that. But again, currently that is a minority opinion.
Mm-hmm. The bubble theory, of course, is something that we all would prefer to avoid, but that is, of course, a possibility. That was Professor Young from the Catholic University of Korea. Professor Young, thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
Welcome to the Korea 24 Stock Market Update. The benchmark Korea Composite Stock Price Index dipped 395.02 points, or 4.91%, on Tuesday to close at 7,656.31. The tech-heavy KOSDAQ lost 15.84 points, or 1.87%, to close at 831.23. You can check Korean stock market updates at world.kbs.co.kr.
Next, we are joined by Daniel Che for our Korea Trending segment. For this part of the show, we check out some of the most viewed stories and issues covered by Korean news outlets handpicked by the Korea 24 team. Hello, Daniel.
Hello there, Andrew.
So, what's our first story today?
After a disappointing World Cup campaign and the head coach Hong Myung-bo resigning, speculations ran rampant on who will helm the Taeguk Warriors next. There have been reports that one familiar figure they showed interest in the position is Paolo Bento, who served that post before.
Korea's engagement with Bento has a long history, of course. But for those who may not be familiar with this Portuguese player and coach, with his first stint with the Korean national team. Can you give us a brief intro of his accomplishments?
Sure thing. Been to manage South Korea from September 2018 for about 4 years and 4 months. During that time, he led the team to the round of 16 at the 2022 FIFA World Cup before leaving after the tournament. He later coached the United Arab Emirates national team before leaving that position last May and is currently taking a break from coaching.
So what do we know so far, and is he or is he not coming back?
Well, the KFA held a meeting of the National Team's committee on Friday to discuss ways to improve Korean football, and topics also included hiring a new coach. On Tuesday, a Korea Football Association official reportedly said that Bento recently communicated his interest, though no acquaintance with through an acquaintance within the association.
So are we kind of in a back and forth situation, or is this all official?
For now, Bento's interest has not yet been formally reviewed, and no formal application has been submitted yet to the KFA's National Team Committee. While the committee did include hiring a new head coach during talks, officials have not yet begun working out the details for the hiring process for the next head coach.
And Team Korea is going to need a new head coach before next year's Asian Cup, of course. So we'll need to wait who fills that position. But let's now move on to our next story.
We're still staying on the topic of football. This time, a Korean star player, loved and celebrated at home and on the international stage, Lee Kang-in. He is set to leave his Paris Saint-Germain team to play for Atletico Madrid.
So is the transfer confirmed? What kind of details do we know so far?
A French outlet RMC Sport reported on Monday that PSG has reached an agreement with Atletico Madrid over Lee Kang-in's transfer. Italian sports journalist Fabrizio Romano also wrote on social media on Monday and confirmed that the deal is in place between all parties. Verbal agreement done with formal steps to follow. Both reported that the transfer fee would be around 40 million euros or around 45.8 million U.S. dollars.
Lee Kang-in, of course, played in Spain previously. So will he be returning to a familiar environment if he goes to Spain?
Yes, the versatile 25-year-old had a good run with PSG since joining the team in 2023, netting 16 goals and recording 16 assists, lifting several trophies, including back-to-back UEFA Champions League titles. And the move to Atletico is seen as somewhat of a homecoming for Lee. He made his name in Spain, playing for Valencia from 2018 to 2021. After more than a decade in the club's academy and for Mallorca from 2021 to 2023, often he's seen being more fluent and more verbal during interviews, speaking in Spanish more so than Korean or English.
So again, presuming Lee Kang-in does go to Spain, what kind of expectations will he face in that country?
Though South Korea had a disappointing World Cup run, Lee was one of the few bright sparks roaming the field in virtually every minute of the group stage matches. Spanish sports news outlet Marca named Lee on its group stage best 11 list and gave him a power ranking score of 23.96. He was the only Asian player selected by Marca and the only player from a nation that did not advance to the round of 32 included there. So you can say the home fans are eager to give Lee a hero's welcome, and they will cheer him on through thick and thin.
Good luck to Lee Kang-in wherever he goes. But now to our final story. Dan, what do you have?
The South Korean government is set to begin reviewing making changes on the legal definition of animals here in the nation, a change deemed necessary as animals are considered things under the current law.
And so what exactly is changing in the definition?
The Justice Ministry said Tuesday that it will hold a forum at the Supreme Prosecutor's Office next Thursday on revising Article 98 of the Civil Act to redefine animals so they are not considered objects or things. The ministry plans to invite various experts to share opinions on legislative issues surrounding the legal recognition of animals as beings instead of property.
It's great that there's going to be the discussions, but can you give us the details of what's going to be discussed?
Yes, the discussions will focus on the current status of animal-related legislation. So they will review the need to amend the Civil Act to separate animals from inanimate objects, as well as on how companion animals should be treated during procedures to seize an individual's property.
So animals may no longer be things in the eyes of the law, but what has been the public's reaction so far?
Over the years, there's been a growing number of voices slamming the law, which they feel fails to reflect changing public attitudes on the growing role of animals as companions. A June public survey by the ministry found that nearly 88% of respondents believe animals should be legally distinguished from inanimate objects. 51.2% said they weren't aware animals were treated as property under the law.
With the growing number of pets, maybe not a huge surprise, but that's all we have for today's edition of Korea Trending. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you so much for having me.
Hi, I'm Claudia Cardenas, Taekwondo world medalist from Ecuador and founder of Himchari Dojang. You are now listening to Korea 24 on KBS World Radio.
Welcome to this week's edition of Hallyu Highlights, your weekly scoop on everything hot in Korean entertainment, from the latest K-pop hits to the K-dramas everyone's binging. And again, we are joined in connecting with our resident K-culture expert, Bernie Cho. Bernie, nice to see you again.
Always good to be back.
Yeah, I was going to say you were in the studio, but then I realized you're not. Bernie, our first item is we're going to go back to 80s. Looks like we were talking about them last week, the group's impressive streaming stats, their album Golden Hour Part 5. This K-pop boy band has once again achieved not only their third number one debut on the Billboard 200 album chart, but also their ninth top 10 debut on this USA best-selling album chart. So how impressive is this feat, and what was the band's magic in reaching number one in the US, and how well did it do worldwide?
Well, we're not only going to drop some numbers, we're going to do some name dropping as well. The reason why this particular debut number one, no less, was so impressive was not only the number of units that they moved and sold in the U.S. alone. According to the latest statistics, they sold over 250,000 albums, 228,000 to be exact, with 223,000 of them being what they call pure album sales, which is another way to say they sold that many compact discs. Now, what made this particular debut and release so stunning is who they beat. This was the same week that Olivia Rodrigo launched You Seem Pretty Sad for a Girl So In Love, and then also Drake's Iceman. So the fact that ATEEZ beat these two massive global superstars to grab the number one throne is truly impressive. And according to All K-Pop, one of the biggest K-pop fan sites out there, apparently the feat of placing nine albums in the Billboard 200 top 10 since 2022 has apparently made the group, and again, I have to state from All K-Pop stance, the one group with the most top 10 albums on the chart among all K-pop groups of the 2020s. Now, that title, I'm sure, is fighting words for other fans of other K-pop bands, but nonetheless, it is truly incredibly impressive. And again, it's not just the US, globally. This particular album for ATEEZ sold approximately 1.8 million copies during its first week, which is a personal best for ATEEZ, and it is the group's seventh million selling album. I think it's safe to say when early next year the top 20 best-selling albums of the year chart comes out, there's a very good chance that ATEEZ is going to find himself snuggled somewhere in the top 20 for 2025 or 2026, I should say.
Are they the next big, you know, Big Bang or BTS?
Wow, that I'm going to say no comment. Let's just put it this way. They're very big. They've made a bang, and they're making a run for the top of the charts. So we shall see. But it's truly impressive in the sense that they have consistently delivered hit after hit after hit. So I think it's safe to say they're not going away anytime soon. I think we're going to talk more about them more and more over the coming weeks, months, and probably years.
Good luck to ATEEZ. But we're going to move now to a different group. In what could be disappointing news to fans, one of K-pop's top Koedex, Card, announced that they will be releasing their first and last album, Where To Now, Part 2 Nowhere. After almost a decade together, Card will promote this new album on their final world tour. What were some of the group's highlights, and what will be their legacy?
Well, you know, the thing is, it's heartbreaking because I think in large part, Card kind of sort of kickstarted the co-ed K-pop band concept that we now talk about and see more and more of, especially with new acts like All Day Project. But Card's been doing it for 9 years, and it's sad to hear that they're going to break up. And again, there are a few things worth noting. I didn't realize this until it came out from their management company, DSP Media, because they've been around for so long. But it turns out they're going to be releasing their first full-length album on July 28th. And the reason I'm surprised is they've put out so many singles. I just assumed they had put out EPs and they put out albums. That it turns out this is their first full-length album. But unfortunately, it's not just their first, it's their last. And I think in some ways the title is kind of ironically, possibly not just appropriate, but a little accurate. It's entitled Where To Now? Part 2. And in capital letters, Nowhere. I don't know if there's some sort of message or mystery there, but, you know, it definitely raises some eyebrows. And again, I think what's fascinating about this is the fact that, you know, putting out their first and final album, they're going to support it with a world tour as well, a finale sort of world tour. And again, a lot of the highlights is that over the years, they've built a huge fan base around the world. They've toured overseas regularly, maybe even borderline relentlessly. And more importantly is that over the years, they've had a few singles that have, you know, topped the US iTunes K-pop chart. They've had a few videos that have, you know, done millions of views in a matter of, you know, hours to days. And so they've been consistently very strong and widely recognized and more importantly respected. So in some ways it's a bit heartbreaking to see just as they're starting to peak and as they started to, you know, create sort of a new trend in bringing back co-ed acts to K-pop, they've decided to retire on a high note, I guess.
And they're doing this world tour. Where are they going?
Well, you know what? We have to wait and see what dates are going to be announced. And again, you know, the thing about them on their world tour is they've had a few successful runs through the U.S., but not too long ago, inexplicably, they ran into visa problems in the U.S. where they actually had to postpone some of their shows and part of their tour. And again, no fault of their own. It was just something that not only affected K-pop acts, but international acts then and even to now. But nonetheless, a lot of fans, and they're usually known by their group name, Hidden Card, you know, are waiting to see what cities, what countries, what dates they'll be hitting. And yeah, you know, I'm hoping that before they, you know, draw the curtains down, you know, have an opportunity to see them one last time before they call it quits.
Speaking of international travel, we're going to go to France now. With more and more non-Korean artists being members of top K-pop boy bands and girl bands, the international nature of K-pop has become increasingly the rule rather than the exception. But today we have news of an interesting new debut that defies this formula, a non-Korean K-pop solo act from France. A French creator influencer by the name of Peek, that's P-E-E-K, is set to debut his new album worldwide featuring the single Mohani. What makes this release noteworthy and why is this a big deal, Bernie?
Well, you know, look, we have become so used to seeing non-Korean K-pop stars, but usually within the context of being a member of a very successful, very popular boy band or girl band, it is very hard for non-Korean solo acts to, you know, not only debut, but to succeed. There are a few bicultural, biracial K-pop solo acts like Chun So Mi who have found tremendous success, but that's in large part due to the fact that they also happen to sing and speak in fluent Korean. Mm-hmm. Now, Peek, we don't know how good his Korean is, but got to credit where credit's due. He's dropping his album worldwide. I've actually been trying to look for it. I haven't been able to find it yet. But what we do know is the title track, the debut track, is called Mohani. apparently has both Korean and English lyrics. So whether or not he pulls it off, we have to wait and see, not just listen to the song, but more importantly, watch the video. Now, the reason why there's a bit of hype and maybe a little bit of mild hysteria about this particular release is Peek. And I think you added an extra E. It's P-E-E-K, mm-hmm. not E-E-E-K.
Oh, right.
He has over 1 million followers across all of his social media platforms. So he has a strong fan base. He has a strong following. Now, whether or not he can pull this off is going to be a bit of a mystery. And truth be told, anytime a non-Korean tries to do K-pop as a solo act, it hasn't always gone well. A few years back, there was an American kid by the name of Chad Future who kind of sort of went viral by doing English language covers of K-pop songs. But he positioned himself as a K-pop artist, and oh my, the social media critics had knives out for this kid. Now, give him an A for effort, but for whatever reason, it's not easy for non-Korean solo acts to find success, let alone respect in the K-pop space. So fingers crossed, we got to wait and see. But look, as far as I'm concerned, if he can pull off the Korean lyrics as well as the English seamlessly and smoothly, why not? Give it a shot. Give it a chance.
So best of luck to Peek. Peek is two E's, not three. But we now turn to the indie scene, where Bombing Tiger has been on the prowl these days as their latest album, Gongbu, has been voted by the prestigious U.S. radio network NPR as one of the albums of the year so far. And NPR is not the only U.S. or international media out showering this album with rave reviews. What you're hearing now is Bombing Tiger's "We," that is French for yes. Bernie, who else has been raving about this album, and who are these guys, or who is this band, and why is this so impressive?
Well, you know, this particular album just came out on May 19th. It's 14 songs from 11 members, and it is a concept album that has literally just got critics just lit up. The NPR music, Robin Hilton, he said it best when he wrote, "Don't need to speak a word of Korean to get lost in the wild world of sounds and rhythms." But it's not just NPR. The New York Times has given it a whole lot of love. Their description is simply put, no argument here. Clash Magazine gave it a 9 out of 10. And other outlets, for instance, in the UK, The Upcoming gave the album a perfect score, 5 out of 5. As well as Alternative Press, Wonderland, The Greatest, and Huck have all highlighted Gongbu as one of the albums of the year so far. And I think it's incredibly refreshing that indie music, particularly from Korea, is getting this kind of international exposure. And the fact of the matter is that this is a band that has become festival darlings. And I hope that this coverage and this hype and this hysteria carries them to even higher accolades and hopefully more appearances worldwide.
I'm going to be listening to the rest of that song a little later. But that was Bernie Cho with this week's Hallyu Highlights. Thank you, Bernie.
Thank you.
And that's also a wrap for today's edition of Korea 24, but we'll be back tomorrow. Again, you can always listen to Korea 24 on various apps, KBS Kong, KBS World Radio, and KBS World Radio on air at 7:10 p.m. Korea Standard Time every weekday. I've been your host, Andrew Jung. Thank you for listening, and goodbye.
KBS World Radio strives to promptly update our listeners on safety procedures during emergency situations. The following are recommended guidelines to follow in the case of an earthquake. During an earthquake, you're advised to stay indoors. Going outside could be extremely dangerous, as you could be hit by shattering windows or falling signs. While indoors, turn the gas off and go under a table or desk to protect your head. Refrain from using gas or electricity until after it is confirmed to be safe.
If you're in an elevator, promptly get off and seek shelter. If you're on the street, cover your head with your hands or bags and stay away from brick walls and gates. If you're driving, stop your car on the right side of the road. Before seeking shelter, close your car windows and leave your keys in the ignition, then get out of your vehicle. Once the ground stops shaking, request help for the injured, while remaining mindful of possible aftershocks. Please check our website at world.kbs.co.kr for up-to-date information and procedures.
KBS World Radio.